Australia should have been insulated from the world's economic collapse. It's a developed nation, the second richest in the world by median wealth, with a whole continent of resources at its fingertips. But instead, the whole country seems to be on a knife's edge. Despite their insane levels of wealth, millions of Australians can't even afford to feed their own families.
More than 50,000 Victorians are needing a free weekly grocery shop to feed their families. Food donations are surging as the cost of living crisis worsens.
So how is it even possible that things could get this bad in Australia? Well, like almost any country, Australia's fortunes have been almost entirely dependent on its geography. Look down at the country from space and you can begin to see what's going on. Nearly everyone in Australia lives in a very small part of the country. Most people live in just a few cities, all dotted around the coast. The interior, on the other hand, is almost uninhabitable. While it makes up 70% of the total land, it's only home to 5% of the population. It's a unique situation that's created some very unique problems. There are thousands and thousands of miles between some cities. They're separated by land that's assaulted by intense heat, droughts, wildfires, and tropical storms. Infrastructure in these rural areas is almost non-existent. It's just too expensive to build and maintain. And yet, despite these problems, in lots of ways, Australia's unique geography has been more of a blessing than a curse. A massive supply of untapped natural resources has given the country an easy route to prosperity compared to other nations. The mining industry is the biggest industry in the country, making up over $450 billion in revenue in 2024, or 14.3% of the country's GDP. Most of these resources are exported to Australia's trading partners in East Asia. With the rise of China's economy and manufacturing in the region in general, it's hard to see how Australia isn't set for at least the next few decades, as Asia will only need more and more resources and it will need to buy them somewhere. But unfortunately, it isn't all that simple. In fact, economies based on resource extraction often belong to the least developed, most unstable nations in the world. Just look at the DRC, one of the biggest mining economies in the entire globe. And yet right now, they're being invaded by one of their neighbors who have coincidentally taken control of the richest mines in the country. And Western media just doesn't report on this because we're allied with the country doing the invading this time. And we all need that metal to make some more iPhones and Teslas. But the question is, how did Australia avoid this fate? Being an island helps, of course, but that wasn't the whole story. You see, when the British Empire was deciding where to ship its criminals in the early 1800s, it seems strange that they decided on Australia of all places. It's almost literally on the other side of the world for one thing, meaning each round trip could take years longer. They weren't sure to places in the world to choose from either, considering they own about a quarter of it. But there was a very good reason behind why they chose to make such a massive detour. In their Nobel Prize winning study, three researchers identified the answer to this question, revealing why Australia became a developed nation in the first place. Tropical diseases. Back in the day, nearly everyone who went to colonize Africa, the Caribbean, or other British colonies would die from disease. Europeans simply weren't adapted to live in these places and they paid the price for this. An average of 70% of the colonists arriving in Sierra Leone would die in just the first year. But in countries like America or Australia, these diseases weren't nearly as common or as deadly, which meant that these colonies could become home to much larger, permanent populations of Europeans almost immediately. This changed everything for the future of these countries. If new colonists died quickly, then the place wouldn't be seen as a new home. Instead, their economies were set up to funnel wealth out of the country as possible, with as few colonists present as possible. Places like Australia, on the other hand, were seen differently. Europeans could comfortably live there, so far more ended up settling there. These economies were still designed to benefit the European nation that owned them, but some of the wealth was kept by the colonists. So why all this history lesson? Well, the point of all of this is that once Australia got its independence, they should have been well positioned to keep all of their resource wealth for themselves. For a long time they did, but it was a chain of more recent greedy decisions that have landed millions of Australians in the breadlines. For decades and decades, especially after the Second World War, Australia's economic planners had a pretty simple strategy that they could follow to get richer. All they had to do was take the money already being made from mining and resource extraction and invest it back into the country. Of course, when we say country, we really mean land. Either rural land for more mining or coastal land near the cities for residential property. As we mentioned, despite having so much land, nearly all Australians live in a few big cities on the coast, and this created a hotly contested residential market. For decades, real estate was a safe net because the prices went up every year. By the 1960s, lots of Australians were absolutely rolling in it, and that money went straight into the housing market. Like almost all developed nations, homeownership became the end goal of most people's lives. And in 1966, 73% of homes were owned by the people who lived in them. and this became the bedrock of the new Australian dream. Most jobs would pay well enough to afford a house, and because house prices were relatively cheap, there was a clear link between hard work and getting a foothold in society. The contrast with modern Australia is really stunning. The reason for this is that Australian housing markets across large cities have deteriorated drastically in just the past few years. The Demographia International Housing Affordability is a report that measures most large cities in the world and how affordable they are to buy property in. Each city is given a rating according to house prices and how they match up with a middle class income. To set the scene, Australia's housing market is so bad that they chose Sydney as the picture for the front cover. Anything under 3 is considered affordable, and a rating above 9 is impossible. A housing market where the average middle class family can't afford to buy a home without major financial assistance. And yet only 2 of Australia's large 5 housing markets ranked under this level. And Sydney was by far the worst of the 5, coming in at 13. Over 2023 in Sydney, rents rose by over 15% on average, and they were already unaffordable. Demands are so high that viewings are attended by dozens of people, and even the most rundown studio flat gets offers above its asking price.
An inquiry has found Sydney has the 3rd least affordable housing market in the world. It warns Australia could become a 2-class society if home ownership doesn't increase.
A generation ago, people in their 20s were expected to be buying a home and starting a family. And now 30-year-olds are considered lucky if they don't move back in with their parents or go homeless. It's truly insane that this could ever happen to such a rich country. In many ways, the causes of this housing disaster are the same as the ones we see in many other developed countries. And migration has been killer in pushing the demand for homes up. Despite Australia's relatively low population, they've accepted a relatively large amount of people in. Between 2022 and 2023, over 500,000 people moved into the country. In the decade before, other than a dip during the pandemic, net migration was around 200,000 every single year. More people need more homes, and new immigrants are much more likely to rent rather than buy. And yet all of this has been covered up by the media and government for fear of completely losing grip on their power over the country that's making the lives of Australians harder every single day. But you know what else is being covered up? The insane benefits of cocoa flavanols. The compounds found in cocoa that boost nitric oxide, improve heart health, and regenerate brain cells. Now, before you roll your eyes, this isn't some woo-woo nonsense. Let's take a look at Harvard scientist Dr. William Lee, who actually backs this up. Check it out here.
So, studies have been done to show that the flavanols in cocoa stimulate stem cells to come out of your bone marrow like bees in a beehive in your bloodstream, and they go out and they find wherever it needs to be repaired. If it's in your heart, they'll fix it. If it's in your liver, they'll fix it. If it's in your skin, they'll fix it. And so we can eat foods like high flavanol cocoa in order to be able to actually get the stem cells to work a little bit better.
That's right, dark chocolates. But here's the thing. Flavanols are the good stuff found in cocoa beans, but they're usually destroyed during the chocolate making process. That's where Black Forest Supplements comes in. They've created the first ever high flavanol cocoa powder, backed with everything your body actually needs, and it's only 20 calories. It's really easy to just mix in with your coffee or protein shake and tastes amazing. And this stuff can boost your body's natural stem cell production, meaning you don't have to drop a bunch of money on stem cell injections. You can just drink some cocoa powder and get the same benefits, meaning your energy goes up and your brain fog disappears. And even better is that we've worked out an exclusive deal with Black Forest Supplements to hook you up with 40% off for the next 48 hours. But this stuff always sells out, so don't wait. Get 40% off by hitting the link in the description and pinned comment to stock up before it's gone.
Then there are the problems with construction and building new homes that most countries face. A combination of bureaucracy, low profit margins for construction companies, and NIMBY laws have prevented enough homes being built. Yet none of these problems are actually unique to Australia. What's really made their housing market the worst in the world is their unique set of laws. Despite all the hits homeownership has taken over the past few decades in Australia, it never lost its popularity with investors. Mining might be the biggest industry, but finance is a close second, and over 60% of that money is locked up in residential mortgages and other housing investments. One of the biggest reasons for this is Australia's insane tax system that all but forces people with money to invest it into housing. For reference, their top tax rate for income is one of the highest in the world. 45% for everything over $180,000 Australian dollars. And this is a huge chunk of your income if you're an investor. Of course, there are a few simple ways to avoid this written into Australia's laws, and it's all designed to push investment into the housing market. One of these laws is called negative gearing. Investors in housing are allowed to deduct their housing losses from their income. So even if you make a risky purchase on housing, you'll always get money back from tax deductions, which all but guarantees a culture of wild speculation. Then there's the capital gains tax discount. If you hold property for over a year, then when you sell it, you only pay 50% of what you would have normally paid in capital gains tax. It simply makes housing a better investment than anything else. And it's this environment of a small collection of tightly packed cities with ever-rising housing markets that has made Australia so expensive to live in today, and has robbed the next generation of any chance to gain a foothold in society. At this point, these laws and speculation have pushed the housing market so far that changing them would trigger a massive economic collapse. The bubble could burst and older Australian homeowners would lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity. And these are the people that are most likely to vote, so the government doesn't want them to lose all of their money. In general, neither party wants to trigger this collapse or be blamed for this whole thing falling apart, even if it would be good in the long run. But every year, it just gets so much worse and worse. Meanwhile, housing prices going up marginally benefits these large voting blocks and makes the very top of Australian society even richer. In fact, if you have serious money, then housing investments have been so much more lucrative than pretty much anything else for decades now. But it's all but paralyzed the rest of the economy, as investors don't care nearly as much about new business ideas or taking risks as in other developed countries. If you're not able to mine it or live in it, they just don't care. Big companies that start in Australia pretty much always move out. Murdoch's News Corp began in Australia, of course, but quickly outgrew its home country. And if he had listened to Australian investment advice, he would have just put the entire thing back into the housing market. To bring it all back around, Australia's mineral wealth clearly hasn't been as detrimental to the nation as it was in the Congo, or really in most other developing nations, but it has given their investor class easy access to massive amounts of money, which has ended up ruining the housing market and the cost of living. And the worst part is that financialization has also taken away Australia's only way to quickly reverse this as well. They haven't just sold off the housing market, they sold off the other parts of the economy as well. But as long as Australia still controls the ground it's built on, they'll always have the means to prop up their economy. The problem is, they just aren't in control of that anymore. The government used to take direct control of its precious resources, making sure that domestic companies extracted them and that the profits of exporting these resources remained in Australia. It's a large part of what made them such an incredibly rich nation in the first place. Over the course of decades though, loosening government laws and foreign ownership have seen the country's mineral wealth rights fall out of their grip. Today, Australia's massive mining industry is nearly entirely foreign owned. The largest companies are the result of mergers with foreign companies or subsidiaries of foreign companies. BHP Group Limited is by far the largest, worth over 200 billion Australian dollars. American investors own 73% of it, and 7% of that is BlackRock's stake. Rio Tinto, the second largest, is also partially owned by BlackRock, as well as by Vanguard. However, the major shareholder there though is a Chinese corporation. A lot of the time, these companies pay little to no tax. Between 2020 and 2021, 32% of Australia's largest companies paid zero tax. Mining companies were some of the biggest offenders. Instead of paying billions in taxes, they pay hundreds of millions to lobbyists who pass some of that along to politicians. They keep this going and everyone gets rich, except the Australian people. It's all a corrupt system designed to be as opaque and complicated as possible. And the only way to see how truly messed up this is to compare it to countries that actually took control of their natural resources and gave at least some of this money back to the people. Between 2018 and 2019, Australia exported over 75 million tons of liquefied natural gas, and this took in around $600 million in tax revenue from the gas companies. Qatar exported a similar but slightly larger amount of gas, but took in over $25 billion. However, Qatar is a much more authoritarian country, and so it makes sense that they could take greater control and extract more wealth from their resources. But what about developed nations? Denmark and Norway also have large supplies of oil and gas which they export. A researcher for the Oxford Institute of Energy Studies between 2008 and 2018 investigated this, and the results were shocking. If Australia had taxed these resources in the same way as these countries, it would have made between $70 and $80 billion in revenue, over twice what they actually made. More recent reports even indicate that over the past 4 years, the government failed to collect over $13 billion Australian dollars in natural gas royalties. Another part of the cost of living crisis is the price of energy going up, which is insane for a country that exports so much of it. Exports have boomed in recent years, but revenue, not so much. That's money that could have built social housing and gone towards securing the Australian dream for generations to come. But instead, this money was taken out of the the pockets of Australians and went straight into the accounts of the foreign shareholders who control these industries. Australia didn't sell its minerals, it sold its mineral rights, and now its people are paying the price for the short-sighted thinking. Other than the mining and finance industry built of funneling economic profit into housing, Australia's economy is pretty lackluster. There is another industry in which they do lead the world though, gambling. Per capita, Australians gamble the most money in the world, $25 billion Australian dollars a year, which is the equivalent to around $17 billion US dollars. Because as it turns out, 38% of Australians gamble every week. And it's all because of the culture of slot machines, referred to as pokies and fruities, are pretty much everywhere in Australia. Along with separate casinos dedicated to them, nearly every single bar has its own slot machines. In the state of New South Wales, there are over 90,000 of them. Nevada, home to Las Vegas, has 120,000. So this is the perfect industry for a country full of old people with tons of money and real estate property. But as should be obvious by now, Australia's government has been laser focused on extracting as much wealth from its people in any way possible. Industries that have clearly tragic effects like gambling are protected so that they can grow. Meanwhile, others are taxed as much as possible. A pack of cigarettes costs between 50 and 70 Australian dollars, and Australia is the most expensive place to be a smoker in the world. While this is a good thing that it does reduce smoking, Australia has pretty much banned vapes and other smoking alternatives as well. You can only buy them in selected pharmacies. These measures are just one part of Australia's many nanostate policies, which seeks to control its people much more strictly than other developed nations, even going so far as to ban social media usage for people under 16.
Tonight, Australia taking an unprecedented step, becoming the first country in the world to ban the use of social media apps for anyone under the age of 16.
That's pretty huge.
Even mature themes in art, for example, are often punished and censored. And yet a rampant gambling industry is fine, although violent video games are often banned outright. All of this amounts to a country that has so much potential, but has been undermined by its own government. And the next tragedy is for the next generation of Australians growing up today. Except for the lucky few due to inherit property, they nearly have no chance of ever getting on the ladder, and having what their parents or grandparents ever had. The rich resources and wealth of their country is owned by foreign companies and shareholders. And the housing market is so bloated that it's ruined the rest of the economy and made the cost of living unbearably expensive. The future should be bright, but at this rate, it could be decades before any real change ever happens.